Таким образом, я хотел бы донести это до вас перед тем, как мы более глубоко будем говорить об этих вопросах. И я хочу, чтобы вы помнили об этом, потому что, когда мы будем говорить об этом, многие вопросы в принятии решения, которые мы должны были сделать, это для того, чтобы сломать эти факторы, через которые мы должны были пройти. Итак, что же фактически мы привнесли в наш аппарат с корпоративной точки зрения? Мы думаем, как я уже говорил, фокус на продуктивном опыте создает телефон, который со многих сторон способен и может использоваться в корпоративной среде многих наших клиентов, особенно когда мы говорим об Office, SharePoint, и также у нас есть и другие функции, которые люди просто любят. У нас есть мы получили большое количество обратной связи, и те пользователи, которые использовали наши телефоны, они довольны телефоном как таковым, и они рекомендуют его своим коллегам, и это прежде всего касается того факта, что мы создали этот опыт во время Live, Zoom, Xbox Live, игры, Internet Explorer, Internet Browsing. И когда дело касается корпоративной среды, мы также балансируем и другие активы, которые у нас имеются в компании. Server Exchange, SharePoint. Это вот самые два релевантных приложения в рамках этой дискуссии. Но, естественно, Azure SQLizer также играет очень важную роль, потому что это третий фактор. Как компания, которая занимается платформой для приложений, мы тратим очень много времени, создавая фреймворки, инструменты, которые экстремально полезны и продуктивны, и ускоряют то время, которое необходимо для разработки полезных приложений, бизнес-приложений в том числе. И эти инструменты, эти фреймворки, это то, что мы привносим в наш телефон. Таким образом, у нас есть аппаратный фреймворк, который базируется на .NET фреймворке. У нас есть Visual Studio и среда разработки, которая для большинства количества разработчиков, которые создают приложения с помощью этих инструментов, они переносят свой опыт на разработку приложений для этого прибора. И для них это легкий переход. И это такое короткое введение. Перед тем, как мы более глубоко погрузимся в эту информацию, я хотел бы продемонстрировать вам то, о чем я фактически сейчас говорю, на самом телефоне. Я думал, было бы полезно иметь некое основание. Не все видели телефон, поэтому я хочу потратить несколько минут. Некоторые из вас его видели. Таким образом, это может быть для вас что-то известное. Но как только вы запускаете телефон, первое, что вы видите, это вот этот стартовый экран, который является также локскрин. И что мы делаем, что мы выносим вверх? Мы выносим самую важную информацию. Это фотографию, которую вы выбрали, как домашний экран. Это личная фотография. Также вы видите ваше следующее календарное мероприятие. И также пропущенные звонки, пропущенные письма электронные. Также у нас необходимо ввести код, PIN. Это является политикой с нашего Exchange сервера, потому что я синхронизирую почту со своим сервером Exchange, и я обязан использовать PIN-код на своем телефоне. И вы также контролируете сложность, которая требуется для этого. И когда я захожу на телефон, я вижу мой стартовый экран, и это наверняка самая уникальная характеристика телефона Windows. Тот факт, что мы обладаем вот этим экраном, который состоит из живых иконок, которые обновляются информацией, которая мне необходима, которую я вижу здесь. Например, я вижу карту трафика здесь, я вижу информацию по рынку ценных бумаг, также у меня есть информация о погоде, может быть, я ее удалил. Вот, информация о погоде находится здесь. Но очень легко перемещать и кастомизировать этот телефон, перемещать эти иконки так, как они подходят. Я могу удалить их всех, я также могу зайти на следующее окно, выбрать следующие иконки, которые мне необходимы, и перенести их непосредственно на мой домашний экран. Итак, то, что мы создали, это то, во что мы верим, является очень личным телефоном, и поэтому мы думаем, что мы и люди так любят свои телефоны. Одна из вещей, которую я хотел также упомянуть перед тем, как мы будем глубоко говорить о корпоративном опыте, мы думаем, что мы создали потрясающую производительность с точки зрения опыта вокруг электронной почты, работы с офисом и SharePoint. Если вы посмотрите наш почтовый клиент, мы действительно верим, что у нас самый лучший почтовый опыт, особенно если вы работаете через сервер Exchange, потому что то, что мы сделали, мы создали богатый опыт. Мы оптимизировали все на этот маленький экран. И мы балансируем здесь также наши новые концепции. То, что мы называем, так сказать, балансовый контроль. То есть фактически это некая эволюция планшетного контроля. Но что это позволяет нам делать? Это на этом маленьком экране, на этом маленьком пространстве предоставить пользователю очень быстрый доступ к отфильтрованной, богатой информации. Поэтому если, например, здесь я вижу все свои электронные письма, но если я хочу увидеть важные письма, я просто перехожу, и он показывает только непрочитанную почту. Если, например, у меня есть непрочитанное письмо, я могу зайти и отметить что-то как непрочитанное, я могу перейти сюда, и он продемонстрирует непрочитанные письма. И многие из нас касаются с тысячами сообщений, различными почтовыми ящиками, и это позволяет вам мгновенно фильтровать всю эту информацию в этой парадигме, например, электронные письма под флагами, например, флаг важности установлен, они будут показываться отдельным экране. И по той причине, по причине использования этой парадигмы, это у меня очень быстрый путь получения доступа ко всем этим различным. И в 7.5 мы поддержим также цепочки бесед, цепочки диалогов. Таким образом, вы можете видеть целый диалог, цепочку сообщений в рамках этого диалога. И здесь вы можете увидеть полную цепочку сообщений и ответов на эти письма в рамках этой цепочки. Если у меня есть цепочка электронных писем, где я ответил на какие-то письма, я вижу свои письма в контексте этой цепочки диалога. И не только я вижу электронные сообщения, которые отправили мне другие люди, но я вижу и свои письма. Это очень полезно, если вы особенно пытаетесь восстановить контекст диалога. И почему я начал эту дискуссию и так далее. Естественно, у нас также полная поддержка HTML, таблиц. И динамически также подгружаются те части электронного сообщения, которые базируются на том, как вы сконфигурировали свой телефон, потому что мы ожидаем широкую полосу пропускания сети. То есть мы по умолчанию не загружаем изображений. У меня нету сейчас интернет-соединения, но вы получаете общую идею того, как это работает. Это парадигма,
которая позволяет вам очень быстро получать доступ к фильтрированным данным, отфильтрованным данным. Это великолепно. Это все работает на телефоне, на всем телефоне, на всех прикладных платформах. И если вы выходите в Visual Studio и работаете там, и создаете новое приложение, вы можете создавать пивот-приложение, опорное приложение, и вы можете использовать тот же самый подход, чтобы создать приложение для бизнеса, которое использует комплексные массивы данных. Что еще было у нас тут в приложении предыдущего? Приложение Cocktail, то есть приложение предыдущей презентации. Cocktail – это не деловое приложение, это приложение, которое показывает в зависимости от того, что у вас в баре есть, какие коктейли вы можете сделать. Поэтому извините, что я не о корпоративных приложениях говорю. Здесь я могу использовать данные для того, чтобы сортировать, фильтровать большие массивы данных и выбирать только те, которые реально могут применяться на основании исходных данных. Но вот календари – тоже важная функция, которая очень хорошо у нас реализована. Мы поддерживаем несколько разных типов календарей. Я могу изменить цвет, чтобы лучше это было видно. Поскольку я работаю с сервером Exchange, я вижу не только свои задания, я могу также посмотреть всех других людей, которым отправлялись соответствующие уведомления. Я могу посмотреть, что это – обязательное сообщение или опционное. Я могу здесь что-то принять, удалить, ответить на любые сообщения, которые мне прислали. И это очень интересная широкая функциональность на основе функциональности сервера Exchange, которая работает на маленьком устройстве, использующем такие парадигмы на телефоне. И, наконец, еще одна вещь, которую я хочу вам показать, это поддержка офиса. У нас есть так называемый офисный хаб. И здесь есть ряд функций, которые предоставляются в централизованном порядке. Целая панорама, целый ряд различных методов взаимодействия. Для офиса у меня есть Notes на телефоне, автоматически SkyDrive, документы, PowerPoint, Excel, Word, Locations, местоположение. Я могу увидеть свой SkyDrive, Office 365. Если у меня сконфигурирован сайт на Office, на использование Office 365, на облачную версию Office, я могу добавить, если это надо, щелкнув на плюс и введя интернет-адрес. Если SharePoint существует, если он защищен корпоративным межсетевым экраном, вы можете предоставить к нему доступ с помощью UAG-сервера, который работает как прокси. В SharePoint у нас есть возможность показывать информацию, если она использует те же самые credentials, то есть ту же самую аутентификационную информацию. Любой пользователь телефона получает очень широкую функциональность SharePoint-овского типа. Вот, например, я сейчас не подключен к сети, я хочу посмотреть кэшированные данные. Ну, вы видите, как это можно посмотреть. Ну, вот здесь, конечно, у меня нет сетевого подключения, поэтому работать не будет. Ну, кому интересно, можете подойти ко мне, потом я подключусь и покажу. Идея в том, что вы видите список данных, документы, и поскольку мы поддерживаем очень широкие возможности редактирования в PowerPoint, в Excel, в Word, вы можете пройти по документу, отредактировать его и выгрузить или поделиться этим документом с кем-то еще. Вот, отредактировав документ, я могу дать комментарий. Я здесь могу написать, и этот комментарий сохраняется вместе с документом, и я могу через SharePoint этот документ, так сказать, опубликовать, чтобы каждый видел и его, и мой комментарий. Таким образом, на наших телефонах, поскольку у нас поддерживается Office, SharePoint, Exchange сервер, мы используем все эти могучие активы для того, чтобы расширить пользовательскую функциональность для пользователей телефоном. И мы можем сделать это лучше, чем любая другая компания в мире. Самым, что ни на есть, оптимальным способом для корпоративных пользователей. А теперь я хочу пройти по ряду других функций. Я буду сейчас больше говорить о том, что необходимо профессионалам в области информационных технологий. Первое – управление рисками. Мы поговорим о понятии управления рисками, насколько телефон может удовлетворять эти требования. Затем об управлении устройствами, про ARM поговорим. Link, Mobile, очень вкратце, SharePoint, Windows Phone 7, я немножко говорил, но сейчас мы поговорим об этом поподробнее. Опции для приложений корпоративного характера, Line of Business Applications и так далее. Итак, управление рисками. Цель. Сохранение, то есть защита сохраненных данных. Если у вас на устройстве записаны конфиденциальные данные, необходимо пресекать доступ, несанкционированный доступ к этим данным. Во многих случаях мы используем для этого шифрование данных, логин, пароль, но иногда трудно бывает управлять такими устройствами, которые зашифрованы, и трудно иногда обеспечивать сохранность ключей шифрования. Во многих случаях этот ключ может тоже быть зашифрованным, и появляется проблема курицы и яйца. Сегодня на телефоне у нас есть защита, девайс лог. Это простой пин-код, или Windows Phone 5. Мы поддерживаем сложный алфавитно-цифровой пароль. Далее, когда мы выходим на сервер Windows Exchange, мы требуем от пользователя, чтобы он использовал сложный алфавитно-цифровой пароль, непростой. Кроме того, мы поддерживаем удаленный wipe, remote wipe. Если вы пользуетесь Exchange сервером, там есть такая функция И большинство людей, если у них имеется возможность получать доступ к мейлу через Outlook Web App, там есть опция. Если вы подключаете устройство к своему аккаунту, вы можете сами войти туда, на эту консоль, и сказать: вот это устройство удалить. Потому что если пользователь свое устройство потерял, он обязательно, конечно, должен иметь возможность войти на сервер и стереть это устройство, чтобы оно больше никогда не получало доступ к этому аккаунту. Кроме того, можно настраивать устройство таким образом, что если вы несколько раз ввели неправильный пин-код, чтобы автоматически данные стирались. Но здесь есть, конечно, проблема. Вот. Проблема слишком интенсивного управления. Вот, есть дети у людей некоторых, которые играют с устройствами и набирают всякие пины и прочее. У моей жены так было. Маленькая дочь там пины вводила, и жена посмотрела: опа, все, все уже стерлось, доступа нету, три раза ввели пин-код неправильный, и все. Но мы имеем возможность ввести аутентификационную информацию и восстановить данные в некоторых случаях. Но иногда вы можете все потерять, если такое случается. То есть здесь нужно быть внимательным. Remote wipe, то есть удаленное удаление, если хотите, удаленное стирание, это полезная функция, но нужно очень тщательно ею управлять, чтобы не злоупотребить, потому что человек может потерять то, что ему надо. Кроме того, есть механизмы защиты данных. Есть SD-карта, которую можно вставлять и вынимать из телефона. Иногда человек может захотеть увеличить объем хранимых данных и использует для этого карты. У нас по ряду причин мы решили, что на телефоне и на этой карте будет всего лишь одна логическая партиция для данных. С точки зрения безопасности это хорошо. Эта SD-карта больше ни на одном телефоне работать не будет. Это дополнительная защита. Она будет работать только в файловой системе того телефона, где она была инициализирована. Вот. Но если человек делает апгрейд или переходит на новый телефон, вот здесь тоже начинаются проблемы. Надо как-то эти данные перенести с одного телефона на другой и так далее. То есть, опять-таки, вы должны внимательно к этому подходить. С одной стороны, хорошо, но могут быть проблемы. То есть, безопасность – это хорошо, но безопасность может вам же самому не дать возможности доступа к вашим же данным. Поэтому смотрите. Да, ну, значит, SD-карта. Во-первых,
that the SD card does not consist of one single contiguous disk partition. You can still, there are ways people can get by that to get at the data. However, we're encrypting it with a 128K bit key, so that it becomes more difficult to use. So there's also no file system access to the phone from a desktop computer. You can sync photos, videos, and music from the Zoom desktop software or from on the Macintosh. We have an analogous piece of software that allows you to sync videos, pictures, and music. But you can't sync documents from a direct PC connection. And you can't access the file system on the device. And again, this is a concern around security. We don't want to make it too easy to browse that device. So the Zoom software doesn't sync documents or email. And that's part of the reason why. We also prevent data leaks with IRM email. We'll talk about IRM in a few minutes. Storage, we did just talk about this here, the 128-bit pairs on the SD card. Removing the card doesn't do anything. And also, when you remove that card, and if someone reboots the phone without the card or with a new card, it will wipe any data that's available on the phone and start over again fresh. Another issue with regard to risk assessment here, protecting against malware. There are a lot of malicious pieces of software out there in the world. One of the main things we've done here is we've required that applications that run on Windows Phone be certified by us. We have a certification process. You submit your application for certification. We process it based on a set of criteria, and if you pass, we publish your application to our marketplace client on every single phone. A big part of the certification process is ensuring that the applications are not exhibiting malware-like activity. So we don't certify applications that gather your credit card information and send it to someone you don't know, for example. That's just an example. What we don't do, we don't certify those apps. There are weaknesses here, of course. Jailbreaking of the phone is a weakness. In our instance, though, if you jailbreak the phone, you can sideload applications, and you could cause problems for yourself if people go that route, and some others as well. So we also have a managed application model. So our third-party applications on the phone are based on the .NET framework, and every application runs within a host process, a single host process that is sandboxed from the rest of the system. We do now in Windows Phone 7.5 allow some controlled background processing of applications. And I'm actually going to talk about that tomorrow in depth about background processing. It's a new feature in Windows Phone 7.5. This enables a lot of scenarios that developers want to deliver. The problem is that if you allow applications to run unrestricted in the background, third-party applications, it's quite feasible for those applications to impact battery life and network bandwidth usage in a very adverse way, because you don't necessarily have as many controls over the lifespan of that background process. So we have controlled mechanisms, and again, we'll talk about that more tomorrow, but it's part of that balancing act, the interests of the user experience, being able to do certain types of things, versus having the health of the device protected. You know, and marketplace certification is definitely part of that balancing act. You know, we don't want to make it more difficult for developers to publish apps. We want to make it as easy as possible for developers to publish apps, because we want to rapidly grow our application base. We just passed 36,000 apps, I believe. But you know, our competitors are very far ahead of us. We got to 36,000 very fast, as fast as anyone else did, much faster than Android or BlackBerry did. And a big part of this is because we are a very developer-friendly company. So why do we require certification? And well, it comes back to protecting the user experience on the device. We want to make sure that the applications are of a very certain, that maintain a certain level of quality. Not a super, super high level of quality. We will still certify your app if it is ugly. We're not saying you can't publish an ugly app. You're perfectly welcome to publish an ugly app. But we will fail your application to certify if it crashes the phone. So there is a baseline minimum, and the certification guidelines are published, and we're trying to be extremely open and transparent about it. And that means that if you fail certification, we are extremely explicit about why you failed, and we help you get through certification as quickly as we can. A little bit more about the life cycle of an application on the device. This is very relevant in the context of protecting the data on the device. You know, applications are installed as XAP packages. We call these ZAP files. The ZAP file gets signed. Once it's certified, it gets a signature attached to it. And the marketplace service will sign those applications with a certificate that's generated based on your identity. Your identity is validated at the time you create a developer account. So the very first thing that happens when you register as a developer is that we perform an authentication process of some sort to ensure that you are who you say you are. Because we're going to generate a certificate that validates your identity. We're going to publish that application with your name and company name on it. So that validation step takes place, and then we can sign your application and certify that it did come from you. Application installation, so apps cannot do anything arbitrary to the phone when they install. They're installed to the phone, and we'll talk about that process in just a second. But a user has full control over what happens. The user chooses when to install a third-party application. The user chooses when to uninstall a third-party application. And the user chooses when to update a third-party application. You cannot do any of these things programmatically. And even our OEM and mobile operator partners who pre-install applications must allow end users to remove those applications. So this gets back to one of our core principles in Windows Phone, that the end user is king, that we want to empower the end user to have the phone be as personal as possible and to perform as they think it should, and we want application experiences to be predictable, repeatable, and we don't want anyone to ever regret having installed an application. And all of these steps help increase the integrity of our marketplace, and a lot of our research shows people are much, much more likely to pay for applications if they have a reasonable expectation about the level of quality of those applications and the way those applications are going to behave. And so this speaks to all of these things that we're doing, because in the end, we believe these certification processes are better for the developer, because it creates a marketplace in which your application is more likely to be purchased. Applications run in a protected space. We talk about this as the sandbox, with the least amount of privileges they need. So one of the greatest things about mobile applications is that they can access capabilities of the device. You want to be able to control a game using input or accelerometer. You want a location application to know your location. And all of these capabilities are acquired by an application by requesting access through the app manifest file. Every application has to go through and say, I do. There's about 20 of these capabilities, and you say exactly which capabilities you need. And then when you're installed, your sandbox is set up to enable you to exercise those capabilities. We also create an isolated storage location on the phone for you to store files, settings, things that need to be preserved beyond an application instance. Our applications run in the sandbox. They're all hosted by a single host process. And that foreground app, we do a lot of things in our operating system to ensure that the foreground app has enough processor and memory cycles to be as responsive as possible, because we want the end user experience to be snappy. And what this means is that if the user moves away from your application, in many cases, you will be, before Windows Phone 7.5, we killed your process outright. You received a series of events, you had a store state, and then when you were resumed, if the person came back to your application, you had to resume state based on that setting. This process we call tombstoning. In Windows Phone 7.5, we've made some changes to enable the process to remain resident in memory. So your third-party process will, and we call this fast application switching. And what this means is that the user gets a very fast, snappy experience because they can go right back and your application is right there. But in order to get this, you do have to recompile for Windows Phone 7.5. And your process still may get terminated at the point at which the system runs out of memory. So there is still a limited amount of resources on this device. You still will run out of memory at some point, and that least used application in the background will eventually be terminated. You have to handle those events to save state to provide the user a good experience. So this is the way that we protect that end user experience with regard to app isolation. Secure access is a very core underlying principle on the device here. You know, you don't want third parties to be able to, most of the best experiences on the device are those experiences that are fueled by cloud-based data. Email, for example, is cloud-based data. But also you know, reading news feeds off the internet is cloud-based data. Browsing pictures that someone has posted, that's accessing cloud-based data. You want to make it difficult for third parties to snoop the wire transmission and be able to decrypt what's going on there. But you also want to protect the device itself. And so you need a number of different types of authentication mechanisms to do this. And again, this can potentially impact manageability for the user. So with regard to access, we support both HTTP and HTTPS. With HTTPS, you get the ability to encrypt that traffic. With regard to accessing a Wi-Fi access point, we support a number of different authentication mechanisms. In 7.5, we've added support for hidden SSIDs, so you can completely hide your Wi-Fi access point, and only users who have been told the name of that SSID will be able to use it. We've also added support for sockets, TCP sockets and UDP sockets. And when it comes to authentication, there's a number of different mechanisms. You know, obviously, NTLM for Outlook, SharePoint, and Internet Explorer supports it as well when necessary. And UAG server is provided as support for SharePoint Mobile. The most interesting one here is AppFabric Access Control Service. With Azure, you do now have the ability, if you're using Active Directory in your domain and you're using Azure, you have the ability to extend that and leverage that authentication mechanism with regard to whatever resources your application is serving up. So this is a very powerful mechanism that you can use if you happen to be using Active Directory and you happen to be using Azure. I realize that's a lot of conditions, but we think these are great products. And if you are using these products, you can extend them to your own application. And this is very easy to do. We have a Windows Azure toolkit for Windows Phone that details exactly how to do this. You know, we talked about the application model a little bit already. I'm not going to go too much in depth here, but you know, you do have to submit for certification. You get signed, and then that object is issued rights to your application. There's a single host process that's running, and your application is running in that isolated storage. This is a little bit duplicative. You know, we've got a series of frameworks. Again, some of the most interesting things you can do on the device entail accessing the capabilities of the device. Not only the capabilities, but the data that people store on that device. So in Windows Phone 7.5, we provide extensibility into the user's calendar store and email as well, and contact store. So you could write your own application that provides users a different view into their own data. A really nice one that came out a while ago is a calendar app called WeekView. One of the things we do not have in our first party calendar is a view that shows you 1 week at a time. So third party has written this. And because we provide third parties access to this data, they can, you know, the thing is though, here's the thing. When you are leveraging certain types of capabilities like calendar and contacts, like location, that have implications for user privacy, you do need to alert the user that you are using these things. So we have, as part of our certification process, we have a series of requirements around this. If you are using location, for example, we require that you first tell the person that your application is capable of tracking their location. And then second, you have to provide the user the ability to turn that off. So, you know, it's a good idea that your application be able to do something without location if you let them turn it off, because then it may be that your application is not necessarily that useful. These are some of the ways in which we are attempting to protect user privacy to balance those competing interests against allowing you to write apps that do certain types of things that are useful, and the health of the device and the privacy of the end user. There's a little bit more detail here about capabilities. What you see here is, you know, there are a number of different capabilities there: AGPS, Compass, push notifications, Windows Live ID. You have to enumerate out that you are leveraging these capabilities in the app manifest, and that's the point I was making here. Security model, there's a policy system, chamber model, capabilities. Won't go too much in depth here. It's very basic, very standard, the approach we took. But the key thing to note here is that third-party application processes are incapable of impacting other aspects of the device unless they've been explicitly granted specific types of access. When the user installs an application, this is entirely managed by the package manager, an application process that runs on the device that interacts with the marketplace service, the marketplace client, and the file system, the device itself, to get the license, to create the state of that license, to set up that sandbox, to provision the tasks and the folders and the isolated storage. So this is all handled behind the scenes. Updating is the same. In this case, though, the first thing that happens is, we do reuse that existing sandbox. We back up the user data, the package manager does, and it wipes the installation folder. These are all steps that are taken in order to protect user data and user privacy. And revocation is an interesting point here. We have the capability of revoking a license because we're signing applications with a certificate. If we at some future date determine that, oh, we missed something, that application is doing something bad, we have the capability to revoke the certificate. And at that point, when the phone connects to the internet, it will notice that the certificate's been revoked and it will remove the application from the device. Let's get into some of the other device management capabilities here. Through Exchange Active Sync, if you're running an Exchange server in your enterprise, you get the capability to manage devices to some extent, Windows Phone devices. And we talked about this a bit, but here's some more detail. You can require that end users enter a password, a PIN code. You can require that that PIN expire periodically. You can save history on that PIN code. So you can say, do not allow a user to reuse the last 10 PIN codes, for example. Length, complexity, and threshold for wiping the device, these are all values that can be controlled from an Exchange Server administration session. Here's what the Exchange Server console looks like here. We're looking at the client access node, and what you can open up here is a properties dialog. This is exactly how you would administer this if you're an Exchange Server administrator. Simple checkboxes here that allow you to impose a policy across all of the devices in your enterprise and assign numeric values with regard to how you specifically, the time frames and the number of times people can perform and exceed certain limits on the device. And this is what happens on devices. So if I impose a new policy in my organization, all of a sudden, and this will impact anyone who's currently got an Exchange Server account configured on a device, but it will also impact people the very, very first time that they configure an Exchange Server account. They'll receive this pop-up on the left-hand side here saying you have to create a new password, and it will detail the complexity requirements as well. One of the really nice things that we've added in Windows Phone 7.5 is an additional layer of control for the user. So on the right-hand side here, you'll see the configuration settings that the user sees with regard to lock on the phone. And the bottom two items here are require password and screen timeout. There's another one about idle time that isn't actually showing here. And before 7.5, the user could not configure idle time. What idle time means is the amount of time the device is not used before it will lock. And what this meant is that if PIN lock was imposed on devices, as it is, for example, at Microsoft, every single time the user powered the screen up, they would have to do a PIN. And so that's really frustrating for users if they, every single time they open their phone, they have to open a PIN. And from a security administration perspective, it's not always, it is a very secure. I mean, don't get me wrong, that's the most secure, but it's a little bit less usable than if you said, okay, you can have 5 minutes. And if you unlock your phone within 5 minutes, we're reasonably certain that you won't have lost your phone within a 5 minute period, and we won't have locked your phone yet at that point. And that's idle time. And the administrator can configure idle time in a required way, but they can also leave that unconfigured. And so this is nice in 7.5 because now I'm able to set my phone to wait 15 minutes before idle lock. And that's a very nice way that we're trying to balance these interests of end user experience versus management of the device. Here's a little bit more detail about Exchange Active Sync. There is some differences with regard to the amount of support in different versions of Exchange Server. You'll see here Exchange Server 2003 has the least number of features. It doesn't get certain HTML email is a very nice feature that you do not get with 2003. But we did recently add GAL lookup, global address list lookup. And so this is a very nice feature I didn't show you. Our Outlook client on the device is extremely rich. I can search the address list on the server. And that lets me go to anyone in my enterprise and get their phone number without having to have it on my device. And we do now support that in Exchange Server 2003. With 2007, I get more features here. I get the ability to use meeting information, meeting attendee information in my email, and auto discovery. 2010, obviously, here, the most features, including 256-bit SSL encrypted transmission is possible, and server search is possible. Server search is amazing if I've got thousands and thousands of email messages on a server. I may want to be able to find one of those even though it's not cached on my phone. And so server search gets you that capability. IRM email we'll talk about in a minute, but IRM is a mechanism, rights management. This allows me as a user to control the flow and distribution of an email message. If I want to prevent an email message I send from getting forwarded, I only want it to go to this one person, I don't want it forwarded, with IRM, I can configure this. And it's really great because now on the phone we don't support creating IRM messages. What we support on the phone is reading IRM messages and leveraging IRM messages to the extent enabled by me. So if I receive any IRM'd email that says do not forward, I won't be able to forward it on the phone, but I'll be able to read the contents of that message. We'll talk about this in a minute. Actually, right now. So IRM, again, is this great feature. There's a number of different requirements. I'll talk about this briefly here. You know, you have to be on Exchange Server 2010, Service Pack 1, actually. You have to have Active Directory in your organization, and you basically turn it on. You say, I'm going to use IRM in my organization. The nice thing about IRM is that you can configure it on a mailbox by mailbox or group by group basis. So if I have a legal department, I may want none of their email messages as an administrator. I can make the statement that my legal department cannot forward any of their email messages. That's a very restrictive policy, but it is something that someone might decide to do. And if you do that, you could set it on the Exchange Server, and they would only be able to send their messages once. Because of that. So you have to be very careful about how you implement IRM because in general you want to allow users to make that decision that I don't want this forwarded, I don't want this to go outside my organization. You can say I don't want this to go outside my corporate organization. Or you could say do not reply or do not reply all. Do not reply all is very nice for very large distribution lists because I think we've all experienced, if you work in any sort of large organization, you've probably experienced a distribution list where hundreds and hundreds of people get a mail. They didn't know they were...
Удалите меня из этого списка, и после этого вы получаете еще. Пожалуйста, удалите меня, пожалуйста, удалите меня, пожалуйста, удалите меня. Я огромный цепочек.
To a email distribution list, you can say, no reply all, not allowed. Great feature. Again, some of these features you can detect were developed through experiences that we had at Microsoft. There are a lot of stories about problems that erupted because of distribution lists and so forth. And if you're really interested, I'll tell you later, but won't waste everyone's time. This is what IRM mail looks like on the phone. On the very far left-hand side there, you'll see there's a little lock and it says protected message. Clicking on that message brings up this dialogue here in the middle. And that's telling me what are the exact rights enabled on this message. And you'll see here, if I try to forward the message, I get this do not forward. You can read, but you can't forward the message. We also, from a management perspective, enable you to leverage your own certificates with Exchange Server. And so this means if you as a corporation have certificates that you yourself want to use in order to validate identity of people and so forth, or if you want to use specific certificates with regard to encrypting email messages, we provide you that capability. So that's all we're talking about there. It's yet one more way, and then people on the device are able to use those, read those mail messages by installing that certificate on the device. Let's talk about SharePoint a little bit more. I did show you a little bit of SharePoint. We're getting short on time, so I'm going to go a little bit faster here. But we've got this very rich SharePoint access on the device. We enable secure transmissions with SSL. And it uses built-in, essentially its VPN support via UAG server, Unified Access Gateway. If you have a SharePoint instance in your organization, it's very, very feasible that you may have UAG server, and you may not know it even. But what UAG allows you to do is this reverse proxy gateway, whereby anyone who is able to establish an SSL connection and, identify themselves with the correct credentials based on Active Directory, they can then get in and leverage an internal protected SharePoint site from the phone. And then these are just some screenshots here that are showing you what this experience looks like. It's not a tiny little web page in a browser. You're getting this rich experience where you see just the lists that you want, and you open a specific URL, and then you see the documents that are stored there. Not only SharePoint, but Office 365. And Windows Live SkyDrive. Since most Windows Phone users have a Windows Live ID, by default, they automatically get a SkyDrive location. And this enables you to very, very easily, as a Windows Phone user, synchronize OneNote, for example. We have had a lot of, we've heard a lot from folks that they really like this feature because they're able to share a single OneNote notebook across people. For example, a family, a couple can share and edit a grocery list, and the other person would automatically have it on their phone without any additional work because they're synchronizing against the same. Now, certainly that's a consumer feature, not an enterprise feature, but it's an example of the sorts of things you can do here. And with SharePoint, you can leverage this to enable a group of people to edit and comment on a document together, and in fact even support round-trip editing and commenting on documents. So it's extremely powerful. We have Link Server coming. It's in Office 365, obviously, but we have a client that's going to be free for the phone. And the Link client is a very beautiful client, actually. I don't have time to show you in the presentation, but I will show anyone who's interested after. It enables you not only to see presence information on all of your Link contacts, it also allows you to automatically join Link-hosted meetings. So if someone has set up a Link meeting and sent around a calendar invite to that Link meeting, it will have a join URL in it. And on my phone, I can click that join URL, and then the Link server will call my phone and join me to that meeting. So it's an extremely powerful experience. We're very excited about it. We're just about to, it's not quite out the door yet. It's just about to be released. We've announced it and we've demoed it, though. We demoed it at TechEd North America. So I will show it to anyone who's interested afterwards. This is a little bit of what it looks like, actually, here. You've got your client, your own information. You can set your picture. You can set your status. I've got 5 minutes left. You can set, you can then look at your groups. You may have configured groups in the desktop on Link. You'll see your groups, and you'll see their status there with their picture. And then when you click on someone, you can actually then go in and IM them directly. You could call them directly with a Link call. And you can send them email as well. So this is just yet one more mechanism that we enable for you to use on the phone. This is private distribution. In 7.5, in fact, this is for all users, we've recently released, you know, one big thing we get asked about a lot is, well, I just want to deploy this application to my enterprise. I don't want it to go on the public marketplace. So we now support a mode of private distribution. It's not full strength enterprise distribution yet. This is our first step. But what it does allow you to do is two things. We have a beta distribution service and we have a targeted distribution service. Beta allows you to release a beta of your application to a small limited set of people, and you don't have to be certified to do this. Your app, you can actually set this up and have it instantly go live, almost instantly. And that enables you to share that application with the group, but only for 90 days. And that's because of the fact that your app isn't certified yet and, you know, a number of different reasons there. But that's the beta distribution service. Targeted distribution is forever. You can have an application that is only available through a special link you send around to a certain group of people. This is done through this targeted distribution service and marketplace. If you are a developer on marketplace, you configure for this. And then you can actually distribute an application to a wide set of people and not have that application appear in the public marketplace. It's a great feature. It's not quite enterprise-grade deployment and distribution. So I don't want you to come away thinking we have full enterprise-grade distribution. I mean, this is a fantastic feature that satisfies a wide number of needs. And at some point, you know, we are very focused to these scenarios. We're very committed to these scenarios, and we will regain, you know, these features. For now, this is where we are. But we think it's a great thing that people can use. A little more detail on how these distribution options work. The slides, of course, will be online, so you can look at them there. So one other point I wanted to make here with regard to applications is that one pattern that we see quite a lot, even if you do distribute your app broadly on the marketplace, this is something that is actually feasible for you to do with an enterprise app. The way that you would do it, even if the data is private, this is an application we have at Microsoft, internal application, to distribute technical information to our field organizations. The app itself that you get off Marketplace is just a shell that requires credentials. And once you log in with Active Directory through Azure, you actually then get the ability to download all of that data. So the fact that our primary mechanism of distributing apps is a public marketplace need not prevent you as an organization from having very, very powerful line of business applications. So that's it for today with regard to enterprise. I mean, the point I wanted to make here is that, you know, we did at one point receive some criticism about not being, you know, I think a lot of this had to do with the fact that Windows Mobile was extremely rich with regard to its enterprise support. It had very, very broad sets of features that you could use. So Windows Phone, when it came out, which was very focused on the consumer, appears at first glance to be missing some things. But I think the fact of the matter is we have quite a lot of things in Windows Phone. And so I think it actually makes an excellent, excellent option for an enterprise. There's a question. Yes. Test. Let's see if that's on. I think it's on the bottom.
Okay. Can you please talk a little bit more about usage model of Windows Phone devices in enterprise? I see there are a lot of features, but why do I need to buy a Windows Phone-based device in my enterprise environment? For example, can I read comfortably big reports, including charts and pictures and tables, and respond to them, including to these reports, charts, tables, pictures, files, and whatever I usually do using my laptop? Can that device replace my laptop? And why do I need it?
Can the device replace your laptop?
Laptop.
In many cases, yes. You know, we're actually out of time, I'm afraid. I will talk to you about this more if you want to come up afterwards. I want to make sure people have the opportunity to leave to go to other sessions, and we will have to empty this room. But the fact of the matter is, yes, There are many scenarios in which you no longer need to carry a laptop based on what you're trying to do with the phone. If you are commenting on documents, it's very easy to do that on the phone. Because documents hosted on a SharePoint that you can access. I think there's a number of different scenarios like that, where the phone is an outstanding replacement for a laptop today. Does it do everything? Well, a lot of people need a big physical keyboard and a big screen. So, you know, there's certainly a place where the phone fits. And we think it's a great fit. So that's what we've got today. Well, thank you very much for your time. Thank you. Please take a chance to fill out the evaluation form when you have a chance, because that's how we make these conferences better for you. So thank you very much.